CliffCentral.com.
All right, we are live. CliffCentral.com on a Friday morning. I hope your day's off to an awesome start. We are doing all the things we usually do on a Friday. We've got Borge coming up a little bit later on, George Meany with the Auto Trader podcast. That's going to be happening. And, of course, they do a live episode every week. So we want to hear from you on your comments with regard to what else you'd like to hear, who you want on the show, etc. Producers Dory and Simpy, we have been working hard getting all kinds of exciting people for the next little while, including people who've written amazing books, people who've got amazing ideas, people who've done amazing things. By the way, the other day we had a guy on who is breaking the skipping championship Guinness World Record for, I don't know, 24 hours of skipping, which sounds ridiculous, but let me tell you, when you actually hear, like, what this guy is able to do in 24 hours with a skipping rope, it is phenomenal. He's this dude from Pretoria. He's already broken the Guinness World Record for, I think it's 6 hours, or for the longest, yeah, 12 hours, I think, was his latest one. Now he's going to break the 24-hour record for skipping, which is absolutely insane. Ben is with us this morning. We've also got Siso Nene joining us in a short while, so lots of good stuff happening. Let's get talking. It's Friday morning. Thank God, I see Bitcoin is back over $23,000, which is also good news. Got to just hold on to it. Well, I mean, listen, any good news on that front would be welcome at this point, right? Like, look how excited about $23,000. I mean, we were bitching when it was $40,000. What I wouldn't do for $40,000 now for a Bitcoin, because I haven't sold mine, so I'm still sitting hoping it's going to go back up.
And so you shouldn't, Gareth. Yeah. I mean, look at everything this last year.
No, it's a disaster.
Like all the stock markets, inflation, all these kind of things. Yep. Everything was going to be shit. And
absolutely,
as Andrew Tate says, don't be a pussy. Just believe it. Like we all. Well, I'm going to say, between not talking for ourselves here, we all like the idea of long-term crypto. So you actually can't be a pussy about this and go, oh, it's crashing again. Because we believe in the long-term play, back up what we believe in.
Right. And so the reason we believe in it is because it's not administered by government, which we don't fucking trust and we don't love. Right?
Yeah. Well, look, it's probably also administered by dodgy people, because where there's money, there's dodgy people.
Absolutely.
But I prefer this one. I prefer to be the romantic and say crypto is my future.
So the other thing that you sent me in the last week, which is worthy of discussion, is a playlist. Ben puts together pretty awesome playlists. Some of them are kind of like house party playlists. Some of them are more like for driving, you know, stuff you want to listen to when you're in a good mood generally. And you're pretty good at this. I think it's a Ben talent. You should maybe put them all up for public consumption. I don't know if you want to do that, but it could be quite fun.
I sporadically put them on my Instagram profile. If you go into the Bounce,
there we go.
You'll see playlists. You'll see a beautiful picture of Michael Bolton. I've got a love songs playlist. some of the greatest love songs.
Oh, brilliant.
I love cheesy love songs. I, you know, like deep down, because as you know, I'm a massive romantic.
Yeah.
These songs are just... They're so special because a lot of them are one-hit wonders, okay? A lot of people write love songs because it was their one chance of getting laid by, like, the girl that they always were simping to for their whole life. And this was before simp culture became what it is. And they put their heart and soul into these songs, and you can really, really hear it. No doubt this woman was just never into them, but I love them. I love the story. I love what it's about. It's so cool. I've got probably like 15 hours of playlists that I've curated over
that's
the years.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's
so many time and places for them.
Very cool. You've got to go and check them out. So if you want to have a look at Ben's playlists, it's probably worth your while. I would recommend them thoroughly. Then somebody sent this this link to a book which you can buy as a really terrible gift. In fact, let me give credit to whoever sent this to me. So Matthew sent me an email yesterday and said, hey, Gareth, you're often on the lookout for this kind of stuff as a joke Christmas gift. This is probably a bit pricey, but still, ew. And then he includes a link to Takealot. Believe it or not, this is on Takealot, right? And it is called Natural Harvest, a collection of semen-based recipes for 589 rand. That's quite expensive. I'm not going to buy that as a joke gift. Sorry.
People are taking the piss with this in a couple of ways. Firstly, the price. But this person's if you go into this link, you are so horrified. The fact is, he's got two books.
Yeah.
This isn't just the only one.
Oh God!
He decided
What's his other book?
He decided to follow up this bestseller with a bartender's guide to semenology, as in every
Christ.
Cocktail needs a little bit of jizz in it.
Oh my God!
And if you go into the description, it says here. The ultimate handbook for mixologists looking for an ingredient that go beyond exotic fruit juices and rare spirits. That's always been enough for me. Anyway, driven by a commitment and passion of the freshly harvested ingredients, semenology pushes the limits of classic bartending. It didn't need to be pushed.
No.
Semen is often, this is the best part, semen is often freshly available behind bar counters.
Jesus, what kind of bars is this guy hanging around in?
If you're milking bartenders, I bet. For me, the big story is this author. What the fuck?
What's the guy's name? Just put it on the screen again. His name is Paul Fortenhauer. Paul Fortenhauer, he must be German, right? I mean, the Germans are the freakiest people ever. A collection of semen-based recipes by Paul Fortenhauer. Ships in 14 to 16 working days. Lucky us. Free delivery available. 589 rand. And if you have Discovery Miles, it's even cheaper.
Well, there we go.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's how you use your Discovery Miles. Now the Kaluna's gone bust. You can buy semen recipes.
Yeah, so thank you, Matthew. So Matthew, who listens to the show, sent that to me. You're a sick individual, Matthew. I will not be buying a copy of that, even as a gag gift. What, for 589 rand? That's an expensive gag gift. Gag gift shouldn't cost more than 50 bucks. Sorry.
That's a gag gift in the truest sense, because people would vomit out of that. Right,
exactly.
But I would love to know what the thing is. Like, is this person making this for general consumption, or is this their highest form of affection? It's like, oh, you know, at a work function, I'll just make, you know, margaritas. But when you come around to my place, I will give you a tequila sunrise with jizz. Is it a form of affection, or?
Can I tell you what? I think when humanity starts looking for, when it's not enough to just drink normal drinks at a bar and you have to start doing things like this, we really bring that asteroid on, you know. Let's just wipe humanity out like the dinosaurs. It's time for us to go. If that's what we have to do.
I keep saying we've peaked.
I think we've peaked. That's we've right. Peaked. So, this is not the – and also, I think that it's a little bit – apart from being disgusting and gross, it's deeply disturbing that there probably are people in the world who have had – semen in their drinks without even knowing it, right? Like, you know how, for example, waiters will, like, drop a steak on the ground and then not tell a really irritating customer that they did that? I'm pretty sure there's sick men in this world who have put shit into women's drinks without telling them.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's happened.
Well, in the movie... Going back to our Woodstock 99 reference first hour, in the movie American Pie, Pale Ale, that was got semen in the beer.
Oh,
and then in Fight Club, Brad Pitt's character was talking about how he used to jack off into the soup at banquet halls he used to work in.
Oh, I'm never but ordering. Beth says, I'm never ordering a cocktail again. Yeah, and the fact that cocktail has the word cock in it is also pretty disturbing, actually.
Obviously, you know the origin of cocktails in bars, public houses, and stuff. Whatever was left in the bar was put into this massive glass vat, whatever.
Oh.
If you couldn't afford a beer, you'd have the tail of the cock. So you'd have a little shot of whatever the residue.
Really, is that where it comes from?
That's where cocktail comes from.
We
think it's so glamorous, but no, it was literally the bars would wrap up. Put all the stuff in the glasses, and then it was like the cheapest booze you could get. you would have the tail of the cock, basically.
Oh, that's disgusting. I've never been I've never been a big fan of like cocktails. The only time I ever have them is when I'm on holiday and like you know that first drink when you're at like a beach or that kind of, that's the kind of thing that you do. But otherwise, I could give a shit about cocktails. I'm not that interested in them. So now you've just put me off them forever. Don't mess with people who handle your food, says Jean. That's exactly right. Just the movie Waiting with Ryan Reynolds in it. Oh, yeah. Just don't be mean to waiters is very good life advice. I wish that was something that they taught at school. Because if more people were just respectful to waiters, they wouldn't be even thinking in the realm of doing horrible things to your food. You don't know what's happening behind closed doors. Same goes for your drinks, right? Ruth says, margaritas can hit the spot or a pina colada. Well, yes, absolutely. Hey, by the way, Tuesday's a public holiday, right? So if and it's irritating as hell because Monday's a normal working day, so, you know, most people won't be able to take that day off. A lot of people taking a long weekend. So if you are one of those people who's got Monday off and you're taking a long weekend, tell us what you're up to. We want to know. And teach us how you can plan your schedule right at the beginning of the year. There are people who are very good at this. They can take off 3 days and end up with like five or seven. You know, especially April. April's the best way. It's jackpot. Okay. Ruth says, long weekend for me. I planned it. Excellent. Yeah, you see, that's very clever.
Ruth's a planner. Ruth's a massive planner. I always think she's doing life right.
Mm-hmm. You were saying, what do you got planned for the Tuesday?
Oh, I know. For this Tuesday, I'm probably going to be working because I got videos to make. But I'm hugely excited by the fact that I'm so organized this year. So in 2 weeks, I'm going to Australia.
Mm.
So I'm going to be in Australia for quite a long time, actually, like almost 3 weeks. So
wow.
If I do the show that time, it'll be at a weird time for me. And then I've already got accommodation holiday planned for September,
Jesus,
November, and January of 2023 already.
Wow.
I'm so excited about it.
Very organized.
There's all these places I want to go to. And the whole thing of like people always put the stuff off and then, it's bullshit. You go book the places you want to go, take the hit on the money, and then your life should be built around that. Same with the public holidays. When you
also
work in January,
if you
make the plan.
If you book the holidays now, you pay for the plane tickets or the accommodation or whatever now, it's the cheapest it'll ever be, right? So you know that because money in 3 weeks' time is not worth what money is now. So if you spend it now, you're getting the maximum value out of it. That makes perfect sense. If you don't have any money to spend, it's not sensible, but we're not here to give you financial advice.
No, that's not one of our strong suits.
it's not our thing. That's not what we do. I'm going to get Sifiso on in a moment or two. Sifiso Nene is a South African comedian who's going to be joining us for a little bit. He's also got a show on, so take note. You talk about booking things in advance. You want to get in front of this. Theatre Marcellus, Emperor's Palace, 27th of August, so end of this month. He's putting on a humorous twist to his somewhat well-known but seldom-addressed problem, which many have found themselves in. Says audiences are in for a treat and should expect to hear jokes delving into taxi drivers, politics, and much more. So whether you're someone who has baby mama drama or you're dating someone who has baby mama drama or, in fact, are the baby mama who has the drama, this show will have you in stitches. It's called Baby Mama Drama 2. That's Sifiso. Hey, Sifiso, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Nice to see you, dude. Tell us about your show, Baby Mama Drama, and like where all of this comes from. This is hilarious.
It comes from the general observation of, as the title suggests, it's in the title. The observation of how people normally behave when they have baby mamas or when they are actually the baby mamas. There's normally unnecessary fights and those.
Sifiso, you've gone dead. I don't know what happened to your mic. We can't hear you. Let's just take him off there and see if we can fix that. Simpiwe, if you can just get on it and check him out, see what's going on over there. All right, back to where we were, Ben, because I'll wait to bring Sifiso back in here.
Yeah. I'm having a rest because that's what winters are for.
That's breakfast, right?
No, breakfast is four eggs, an avocado, sweet potato, feta, and yeah, that's about it.
So you're not just organized with you're not just organized with holidays. You've got your meals planned out as well. Good work.
Gareth, I am the person I've always wanted to be. It really hit home, and I'm owning it. I'm living it. I'm enjoying it.
Your best life. I'm just happy. Is that what it is? You're living your best life.
I'm best lifing, and I'm finding out what that means more and more every single day.
I hate that term, living your best life. I mean, it used to be a thing that I thought was quite cool, but the more I think about it, the kind of people who say it all the time are exactly the kind of people who piss me off.
So. And also who aren't doing it. Yeah, it shouldn't be something that you scream from the rooftops. It's just something you should be doing. It shouldn't be a luxury. Action. It should be the basic.
Action rather than nonsense, you know, rather than words.
Yes, exactly that.
Ruth is being very optimistic here, and I like that. One more month, she says, and we will be in spring. Yeah, couldn't agree more, hey? The baby mama.
Well, it's always
the baby mama cuts Sofiso's connections, says Jean. That's about right.
Exactly what happened.
How would you feel? Would you feel if you suddenly found out that you had a child that you didn't know about?
Well, I'd be a man and step up to the plate to make it happen.
Really?
That's pretty
But how would you feel, Ben? I'm not saying what would you do, because I'm pretty sure you would take responsibility. But how would you feel if you found out you suddenly had a kid from some baby mama and you didn't know about it?
Okay,
let's say the kid was already 4 years old and for some reason she just decided to keep it from you.
Yeah, it's a good question, because every guy feels shit about it. Every guy doesn't want this because that was never the plan, okay? So that's definitely how you feel. Anyone who says differently is a liar. No one's going to be like, oh, what a relief. There we go. I can have a kid now. That's great. Every guy will feel crap.
Mm-hmm. It's expensive. It's frightening. I mean, anyone who's had a pregnancy scare will know about this. Sfiso, how many baby mamas have you got?
I have two.
Two? Jesus, that's a lot of admin, man.
Yeah.
Two families, two sets of friends, two different people you have to pay for like school fees and all of that shit. It's a lot of work, man. You're braver than me.
Dude, it's quite challenging. But it's even more challenging if you didn't know about the second family.
Yeah.
You just find out.
I'm always amazed at these TV shows. I'm sure you've seen them too. These TV shows where you have these guys, or very rarely, it's normally guys, it's hardly ever girls, and they have like two separate families, and they manage to keep both of the plates spinning at the same time. I marvel at that, because I find one relationship hard work. I don't know how guys, you know, like these guys who cheat, or they live this double life where they have like two women in two different cities, and they manage to keep it going. Just seems to me like so much work.
Dude, cheating is work. Cheating costs a lot of money, because now you must, and energy. And energy, because now you must lie to the other one and tell the other one that you are going to work or make up some kind of an excuse. It's a lot of admin. I don't know how they do it.
No.
It didn't happen like that with me.
No, it's too much. In South Africa, we have a lot of situations like that. Obviously, you've got these a lot of South African men who work far from where they grew up. And, you know, a lot of them might have moved into cities, so they've got the bit on the side. Ben and I often talk about, like, the machoshas who, you know, who are part of these guys' lives. And yet, when it's not the machosha and it's the actual wife, then it's a whole different story. Am I right, Ben? We've often spoken about the machoshas.
Yeah, they're everywhere, huh? And guys trouble themselves with too many machoshas. It's happening.
Yeah, man. It's crazy. And sometimes you can be loyal to your woman and only to find that you are Joseph and she's seen God on the side.
Has that ever happened to you?
No, it's never happened, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. I don't know a lot of guys. I don't know a lot of guys, even if it's happened to them, who would admit that they were Joseph. And that Mary was seeing God on the side.
But the thing is, you can never know. You could be thinking that you are a good guy who's, you know, raising his kid or his kid. Meanwhile, you don't have cheated.
Yeah. And you can't. But people
never know.
These days it's harder. Don't you think it's harder to lie now than ever before? Because people leave a trail, a social media trail. They leave a, you know, there's always like evidence on the internet these days that there wasn't before. You know, you could, I've heard of people who found out in extraordinary ways, like that their boyfriend or girlfriend's been cheating on them because they've seen it in a photograph on someone else's social media. And they're like, you told me you were going to work, but you were in this restaurant on Thursday night. Look, there's the date stamp. The fuck?
Yeah, it is difficult these days, obviously, because of the evidence. It's everywhere. Everyone is filming something as you are out on a date with someone. Someone is filming.
Right.
And then something happens, and then boom, there you are. And then your partner finds out that you were there. Mm. And then it becomes chaos. But some people are a bit careful. They are still good with it. They keep it very
well. I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. The real professionals are these blessers. I mean, those guys are really good at what they do because they're actually paying, so they can make the rules. So they can actually say to the machosha that she must. You know, I'm being very rude here by calling them the blessee. They can say to them like listen, yeah. I'm paying for this. You are not to put this on social media. You're not to tell people that you're at this restaurant with me. I know a guy who he's always like with a different girl. He's a real player. He like lives large, spends a lot of money, takes girls out on dates, has plenty of sex. You know, he's Ben, to coin the phrase we use, living his best life. And this guy, you will never see anything on his social media. And he doesn't allow the girls that he's with to post anything either. Like, he doesn't want them to show that they're with him because it'll ruin his reputation with other girls.
I don't think it's the blessers. I don't think we can narrow it down to the blessers only being the ones that are discreet about cheating.
Yeah.
Because blessers are men.
Yeah.
And people who cheat the most are men.
Of course. Of course.
And we as men, we are like that because we don't want to be caught.
Listen,
by Spisa,
something's gone wrong with your sound again. I'm gonna ask Simpiwe to just sort it out one last time because we got to kind of at least try one more time. But otherwise, I'm gonna let you go off the show because it sounded terrible. I could hardly hear what he was saying.
I would love to know the whole like blesser market, how COVID impacted that. Has it formalized it?
Wow.
Has it increased opportunities, decreased opportunities?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I think it probably would have decreased it because a lot of that is for both parties being seen, right? So if you're not actually at the club ordering bottles with all your, you know, girls around you and you're the blesser, if nobody knows, what's the point? Like the whole reason that a lot of these guys are doing this stuff is because they want to be seen to be the guy who has all the girls. So I reckon under COVID,
we really should get a Mahosha in, Gareth. Get someone from the Mahosha Union, you know, a spokes-Mahosha that wants to come in and just share the state of the nation, really. I got so many questions, you know. Like, are young Mahoshas feeling inspired to join the industry?
Who are the Mahoshas shop going? Stewards? You know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. I'm actually kind of excited about this rugby tomorrow. I think it might be fun.
Of course you are, because I think I framed it perfectly well.
Hold on. Let's just be clear. We're not going to Nelspruit. Ben is not, you know, driving me to Nelspruit. That's not the plan. We're just going to watch it. We're going to watch it here in Gauteng, so there's no, like, huge amount of travel involved. But we'll see where it goes from the rugby. I mean, it could end up being quite a party.
Yeah, it will be. It's Saturday at its best, and because it's Nelspruit, I think it'll be quite a high scoring game. I've got a good feeling about that.
Okay.
The All Blacks have never been shitter.
Yeah.
They'd lost a series at home to Ireland, and the Springboks also have their own issues, so it's gonna be beautiful. Beautiful.
All right, here's some insight from Siabonga. Sia says, my big brother has a blessee, and she used to work with us. I used to say to her, nice hooker heels, and she never caught on. Ruth says, ask Alan Ford to organize. He knows a few machoshas. He does, actually, because he has them shouting and screaming outside his apartment. By the way, I think we'll have Alan on not this Wednesday coming, but the one after. So he's got an update on the hookers that hang around outside his apartment. Of course, he claims it's got nothing to do with him.
He attracts that stuff. I've spent a day in Cape Town with Alan. He attracts that stuff, whether he likes it or not.
He should be
the shop steward for the Mahoshas.
when was it that you and I were at an event and Alan was there, like, doing his thing? I can't remember the last time that happened, but you and I were laughing about it. I think it could have been, maybe it was the Nedbank Golf Challenge or something.
I'm not sure, but there's been a few.
That guy.
Alan is, because he's like larger than life in every single way. Like every word seems like there's urgency to it. So he will basically tell you about what the cocktail is that is being served, and you think that something is about to happen, something's about to erupt. We should probably get him that cookbook.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll find a way.
So Sanella says the problem with that guy I was talking about earlier is that he keeps moving on to the next newer, younger, hotter girl. After a while, the previous girls he no longer pays attention to will expose him. Well, I don't know whether that's happened. I haven't actually asked him about it. I mean, he's not like a very close friend of mine, but I've watched him operate. And he seems to have a method, and it seems to work. I mean, maybe he keeps them on side. I'm not sure how that works exactly. There are people who can do that.
I have the same questions. I have the same questions because that guy, he's probably got means. There's no doubt about that because you live like that because you have money or you're a con artist getting money from someone. But what happens, not that you should ever think this, but what happens when he becomes 50 years old?
Yeah.
There's
always a price.
No, but the thing is, like mentally, where does that put you? Because you've used girls like dish rags for so long, that what does give you happiness or contentment or that kind of thing? Because even though a lot of people, narcissists in general, don't need that kind of stuff, it's going to hit you like a ton of lead at some stage. And, like, you're so accustomed to hot girls, and it's like a currency to you. It's like a lifeblood to you.
It is.
Even when you're really rich, you lose the ability to be attractive because then you know deep down they're only with you for the money. That guy knows at the moment it's money, status, good looks, adventure, all of those things. I think it's going to be so hard for guys like that when they just know that basically I'm paying for these girls to have sex with me. That must be such a kick in the nuts psychologically.
So if you had to rank, because you just made a little list, and I can't help thinking that one of the conversations that we've had before, I don't even think we've had it on the show, is like if you had to estimate the value of a certain list of things in your life, what would be at the top and what would be at the bottom? Like if I had to say money, adventure, women, sport, freedom, travel. Like, how would you arrange that list? That's five of them. See if you could arrange those.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, I think freedom, because that's the most important thing. It's invigorating to be free. It's just something that you can never get away. So that, to me, is first, second, third, no doubt, all day. There is something that you can never describe, but a certain woman can make you feel, but it's very fleeting. So I don't think you can put it up there in the top three, but it's just when that hits the straps, it's the best thing for a guy in the world because it validates you, it makes you feel like a superhero. And there's a fair amount of, like, every guy has this competitive nature about them, right? They want to succeed and they want to do things like that.
100%.
That's a huge value thing for guys. You look at a guy who walks into a room with a particularly good-looking woman. Guys sort of envy him or they hold him to high regard. Then, you know, that person could be like a biophysicist with a Lamborghini out front and has helped 7,000 children have clean drinking water. they don't give a fuck. It's all about the girl they have on their arm. Mm-hmm. And that's how we operate. So I think freedom, the girl thing hovers around, and money just allows you to have both of those things in abundance.
Yeah.
The more money you have, the more freedom you have.
Yep,
the more money you have, the more women are attracted to you, and you get options. And then from there, everything else is kind of trivial. Everything else is just a personal quirk. Like, for me, it's sport. Travel is great because it expands you as a person. Mm-hmm. People who don't travel stagnate and become very cynical.
Totally right.
So travel is an actual like vital need of society. But I think if you get those top three correct as a guy, as a heterosexual guy,
that's good.
Those are what really get you out of bed.
I can't fault it. Hey, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, freedom does come first. That's also now often freedom will be in conflict with the woman thing. Because when you're in a relationship,
you
give up a certain amount of freedom. It's like anything that really matters to you, you have to give something up to get something else. You know, the cake is only so big for most of the really important things in life. So if you cut half of it for freedom, that means you only got half of it for relationships. And that's not always good enough for some people. They want more than half. You know, for some... Some girls really, will not settle for half of the cake. They're like, no, that's not what I'm in this for. I expect more. So you got to decide what your cut is.
Yeah. As they get older and they feel their value diminishes within the relationship, they'll become more handsy towards that, more demanding towards that. And again, that's not an inconvenient truth. But it's spot on.
Do you know what I always laugh at? Like you know what I find hilarious, no matter where or when or who, is when someone talks about when someone says, oh, you know, my friend Steven or whatever, he's such a nice guy. He has such a dragon for a wife, for a girlfriend. Because I've never experienced that, right? So to me, it's always hilarious. Like, I can't empathize or sympathize with someone who has a dragon for a girlfriend because I've never really dated anyone who was that awful that afterwards I described her like that. But, I mean, we hear these stories. You know, it's usually in the third person. Someone will say, oh, you know, Tom's such a good guy, but oh my God, what a fucking awful girlfriend he's got. She's just the most terrible person. Part of the reason that she might be terrible is that he's such a dick. I mean, that's often the reason, right?
Yes.
Like a woman often will sometimes become like that because the guy is so unbelievably terrible to live with that that's the only way she can survive is by becoming a monster.
Yeah, and this is why I find relationships fascinating. This is why I still hold out hope that I'll be in one, because I think that if you get it right, it is the coolest thing.
Mm.
It is such an extension of where life is because everything is amplified. All your hopes, dreams, all these kind of things can be mirrored with someone that you really care about. But, fuck, it's almost like it's like having a sports car because when it doesn't go well, it breaks. And as much as you care about it, and you've got the sunken costs kind of thing going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you still love to look at it, but you don't get the utility which is driving you to have the real love and passion.
Mm-hmm.
That is why, yeah, I mean, like you can make an analogy, and maybe this is something that George can take on, but you can make an analogy with relationships and cars and
definitely
sex lives pretty easy.
I mean, you know that, like, again, I can only look at this from the guy's point of view because I've never been a girl, but if you look at some guys, you just know that they married a station wagon, and other guys are marrying sports cars, and some guys are not even buying the car, they're just renting it for a while. And you can see straight away that certain personalities you can equate to certain kinds of car. And I mean, like, people are, it's incredible. Like, some people are, they're happy, they genuinely love, and they're comfortable in, for example, a van. Like, some people are van people. Some people are sports car people. Some people are SUV people. And I mean, it must work the same way as, you know, if you're a woman looking at a guy, you're like, is this guy an SUV? Is he a Bucky? Is he a, you know, a Unimog? I'm sure that girls look at us, they don't necessarily, unless they are petrol heads and there are girls who love cars. But I wonder if they look at us like cars, for example. Think about us in that sense. Draw an analogy.
What? Yeah, I mean, obviously, everything that we say has the counterbalance of effect here.
Yeah.
But girls definitely don't do that because firstly, they don't know enough about cars, and secondly, girls don't make jokes that we do. It's another thing that the reason I'm saying it like this is because I'm getting back to our Andrew Tate conversation earlier.
Oh God, here we go.
Guys are just, Gareth, we have to appreciate this. We are just wired a little bit differently, and we love talking about this kind of stuff because we have this conversation a lot. So we can't just say that chick's hot, I like her.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have layers. This is why the car analogies are so good. Yeah. Whereas with girls, they only ever talk about certain things, and then they kind of just, they're happy with that. We as guys, and I've realized this over the years.
Well, they don't listen. I mean, so women don't have to work as hard to make the impression, especially if they're good looking. Then all the work's done.
Exactly. Right? That's why.
Guys, I didn't develop a personality or a sense of humor because I wanted to develop a personality or a sense of humor. It was the only way that I got attention from girls at school. That's cut and dried, the honest-to-God reason that I learned to make funny remarks, to observe things in a kind of, oh, that's an interesting way. The whole business that I've been in for the last 22 years of talking shit on radio, television, and on podcasts, it comes from being at school and going, okay, well, I can look some about a 7. So in order to compete with the guys who are in the 8 category or the guys who are like tremendous sportsmen or whatever, I have to be shit hot funny. And I have to make interesting conversation. I have to know stuff. I have to know useful, cool, amazing stuff. And I promise you that is 90% of the reason that I got into this.
Exactly, because you had to create the higher value. You know, in the messages here, Carl said something interesting about, you know, personalities of a fat people. It's all about looks,
yeah.
And I kind of get that. if you are trying to just hook up, okay, there's a big difference between that. But from my personal experience in life, the greatest joy is when you're with someone that you care about and you are still desirable to them, and vice versa. And that is where personality has to take place, because there's only so many tricks you can play with that one horse, which is maybe being hung like a horse or looking like a certain way. That goes thin.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are, how well you lay cable. That all that kind of stuff does go a bit thin. You have to have a personality to get that the real juice of what's out there.
But if you're a great looking girl, you don't have to do any of that. This is your people talk about privilege, and I've often said that the real privilege in the world is like growing up with both parents and they love you and you grew up knowing you meant something to somebody, right? And we talk a lot on the show about how difficult it is to raise kids and how parents have this really tough job. All of that stuff's obviously true. But I think the real privilege in the world isn't even like parent privilege or having both parents privilege, which is the real thing. I mean, like, it's been proven time and time again that is a major advantage in life. I reckon the real privilege, sure. My God, have you hit the jackpot. If you are a beautiful girl, if you're a great-looking female on Earth in 2022, your life is charmed. You are just bang in the middle of happiness.
It's all yours
to fuck up, is what I'm saying. Like, that's just incredible.
Yes.
You come out of like your teen years and you just are beautiful. You have a gorgeous face. You have lovely hair. You have nice skin. You have a good body. Boom. It's yours to fuck up, honestly. Everybody else is working
just
to reach a semblance of what that feels like, and you've done nothing to earn it necessarily.
No, I get you, and I agree with you on so many levels, but my final Andrew Tate story for the morning is him and his brother live in Romania, okay? So they decided that was going
to
be where they
were. What a place to live. Become. Holy shit.
Yeah, but again, like, it's just so smart the way that they wanted to do it, because they can live cheaper, they can get all the different things they can get without the crime, anyway. They said that they used to go on holiday to this town in Slovakia, right? This is about maybe 10 years ago. And this was before Instagram. And he said that you would go into this town, there was literally the hottest 10 out of 10 women on every square mile, but there was, I don't know, they would go out and there would literally be like 110s, and they were all gorgeous, right? This is before the incident happened. Then Instagram happened, and the town obviously got bigger, and an airport came in. But then because of Instagram, these girls were being told by, I don't know, everyone around there how hot they are. So then what happened? All these girls moved to Dubai so they can just post pictures of themselves with their various appendages in the sun.
Yeah.
And then they are now living that life. So they went from wholesome upbringing where they had a family, they had support structures, they probably had lives of purpose, whatever. But because they tens on Instagram, they're now living in Dubai, probably getting paid by Arab men to see their genitals.
Yeah.
And then they've got to, like, date fuckboys who only care about their sports cars and status.
Yeah.
And then you're just another dish rag that's going to be passed around. So you look at it like that and go,
your value goes right down, right? Curse.
Yeah. So if these girls didn't live a life of vanity, they might have met someone pretty cool. Sure, he probably would have, like, been a farmer or whatever. But they would have had a life of purpose. They probably would have raised kids. Like, I firmly believe that if a woman says they don't want kids, they're probably lying, or they're just not entirely sure they can commit to it. It's like a superpower to give. Like, imagine you can give birth. That must be a superpower to a woman.
Yeah, of course.
So all of these girls who are so hot, they're being objectified in their primes until they get to, like, 32, 33, when they start, you know, going off the shelf life
It's a very destructive feedback loop.
It is so destructive, because then the insecurities come in, because you've been told you're beautiful for every single day, fire, emoji, aubergine. And then suddenly you don't get that. You think, oh, shit, okay, well, what have I got? I don't have a family.
Yeah.
I got such a distaste for men because they just they objectify me all this time. So would you then talk to that woman in their 40s who's just now gone for her third operation on her face, whatever, fourth boob job, whatever? Wouldn't she prefer to live in that village again? And a lot of them might go, sure, actually, that sounds not so bad.
Well, maybe
beauty can be an absolute curse.
Maybe they have to go back to the village because people aren't paying them money to stay in Dubai anymore. So,
invariably, they will. They'll go back to.
They could get to experience that firsthand.
But they'll go back to that village, Gareth, with no idea of how to work a plow. They won't have kids to look after them when they're older. They'll literally be like that broken-down sports car in a rough area that people have graffitied. And I know this sounds incredibly crass.
It is crass.
This is the full circle moment we've got here.
Jesus. Carl says it's One Direction. Hot women are apex predators. They do not need to be funny or interesting. An ugly dude can land a 9 by being funny. I'm a case in point. It makes no sense that my wife is with me, says Carl.
Carl, you keep talking about this wife of yours. If we don't get any pictures soon, we're not going to take your comments seriously.
And then, you know, Therence says, quite rightly, the thing about looks, it fades. And that is true, but I still believe it's the greatest privilege. Again, nobody is going to be attractive to everyone all the time. And everyone becomes old, and some people become old and bloody ugly, and some people age gracefully. And sometimes it's just the luck of the draw. It's like your genes, right? You can mitigate that somewhat if you're a man, by having personality and money. And if you're a woman with personality, a lot of guys are quite intimidated by that. Weaker guys, obviously not, you know, the kind of guys that you want to hang around with, frankly. But I think you can mitigate. It's easier for men to mitigate that stuff than it is for women.
Sure.
Because women actually look at the whole person, whereas men we're mostly stupid. And this is the counterbalance to all the conversation we've had where, you know, like, we are objectifying women, etc. The reality is, like, women actually appreciate the whole person, which is why a guy can continue to have value as he ages, and it doesn't go the other way around. Men are mostly stupid about that stuff.
No, I wouldn't say they're stupid about it. You look at what you need in life, right? Like, I look at myself. I cook. I can support myself. I can do pretty much anything. Like, I'm a catch to myself because of the way I've designed it. So I'm not essentially looking at that. People go, oh, okay, well, you're hugely shallow. It's like, no, it's just that's what I need in life. I need someone that I'm physically attracted to. I need someone that's going to be so invigorating and make me feel younger, because this is how guys look at things.
Mm.
When you look at someone, like a woman looks at a guy and goes, I need him to provide me with this and that and this, like in a traditional sense, right? Yeah. You need security, you need
I can already hear the feminists saying, no, that's not true. I can look after myself. I don't need you for that.
Cool. Then I always say the best of luck to that. But instinctively, genetically, women will look at a guy differently to men because of what you need. So call me superficial, call guys superficial, call any honest guy superficial, because every guy after a couple of beers will say exactly what I've just said there. You look at what you need. You don't look at the whole picture. Yeah. I don't often give a shit. But I say it's for all people. I'm not like focusing on women here.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm single, guys. This is why I'm single, as you can see.
I think that was the conclusion. So if anyone has found anything that Ben and I have said this morning to be completely offensive and wrong-minded and stupid and ignorant and all that, well, take your the antidote, the punishment that we are existing in is the fact that we're both single at the moment anyway. So that should make you happy. No one wants to be with us, even if our opinions we think are true and valuable. No. Right now, there's no one.
I firmly disagree. Lots of people want to be with us, Gareth. Of course, that's absolutely bullshit.
Let's see.
We're just very selective.
Well, someone who's chosen to be with us this morning is Borge. It's always good to have George Meany on the show. Hey, George, how are you doing?
Hey, Gareth, how are you? Good, and you?
Good, nice to see you.
Choosing by obligation, perhaps.
George, what do you think of Ben's analogy earlier that that we could look at women and women could look at us as cars and different kinds of cars? Like, you know when you're looking at a station wagon, and you know when you're looking at a minivan, and you know when you're looking at a sports car, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's to a certain degree, I suppose it can be argued that it's still objectifying. I suppose people do look at each other in a superficial way, which is, I suppose, the sad part.
Yeah.
You've got to get to know the whole person.
It's the accurate part, though, George, because that's why those cars in the Soviet Union never really sold internationally, because they didn't look that great.
What were they called? Larders.
Yeah, they were also absolute dogs.
Larders. That's a horrible car. All right.
Also, if you were to look at the Fiat Multipla,
oh geez,
probably a good car, but people didn't want that, right? On a superficial basis.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, most cars, the utility is the same. It does the same thing. It's really just the aesthetics that's different. Most cars are good cars.
But that doesn't make us shallow consumers, though.
Most people are good with plow, Ben. But it doesn't mean you want to be with them. All right, Borge, what have we got this morning?
Well, Gareth, this is a surprising story in that there have been about four or five. And you know I drive a Jaguar I-Pace, right? I've been slightly criticized for being a little bit too positive for EVs. So now and again, I'm going to bring you a little bit of a negative story just to balance the scales a little bit. There have been approximately four or five Jaguar I-Paces that have spontaneously combusted.
Oh, shit, George. Have you got a fire extinguisher in yours just in case? Oh my God!
No,
look at this picture George has just put up. It's like the whole car is burned.
Wow.
No one's getting out of that alive.
Car. No. So, I mean, obviously, there's been thousands and thousands of these things that have been sold worldwide, and there have been other marks and models besides Jaguar I-Pace that have set light. But this is the latest one, and this particular gentleman charged his car overnight in his garage, and went down the next morning to, go to work, got in the car, unplugged it, got in the car, got out again. He was going to leave. And then when he came back to the garage, was met with a wall of smoke.
Jesus.
And he said he heard this like crackling and popping sound in his garage. So what he decided to do was jump in the car. I think it's a stupid thing to do. This was a 2019 Jaguar I-Pace in Florida in the U.S. Decided to jump in the car and pull it out of the garage while it was smoking.
Wow.
But it probably saved his house, because most houses in America, I mean, if you look at that, it looks like a lot of wood and
stuff. No, he did the right thing. I mean, I'm glad that he didn't burn to death in the car as well, but George, you better have a fire extinguisher just in case, eh?
I've got a little bit of a wake up call when I read that article.
But isn't it true you must also? I've always been confused by this, and actually, this is one of the things I've always wanted to ask you, because you're our guy when it comes to cars. How come you still see so many cars that are just abandoned on the side of the road and burnt out? I mean, how often does that actually happen? Because I've seen it a lot in my life. I've often seen burnt out cars sitting on the side of the road.
Well, I mean, I suppose you've got to
those are not all EVs.
Awesome, and an insurance claim, because that could be, you know, it could be a way to kind of, sure, but I can't sell this car, so let me burn it. You know, it could be arson and insurance claim. I'm not saying they all are, but they're not all EVs. You're right. And I mean, I don't know if you remember the Ford Cougar that set to light. There was a whole recall of the Fords in South Africa.
Yep.
Because they were setting a light. So it's not only reserved for EVs.
No, definitely.
So, yeah. Be careful. The one thing an EV battles to handle is heat. To a certain degree, extreme cold, but mainly heat. So if you do drive an EV, mm-hmm. like I went down to my mom 2 or 3 weeks ago and took my iPace with me. And the practice I follow is when I get to a fast charger, I leave it for about 5 or 10 minutes. The car's just been driving. The battery's been working. The lithium ion inside there is hot. Mm-hmm. Before I plug it into this 155 kilowatt charger, leave it for 5 minutes.
Okay.
Just let it cool down a little bit.
Some sensible advice.
Lithium ion doesn't like heat.
No. No, that's very clever, because otherwise you're just stressing the whole thing. And you know, these batteries, we know, they can be extremely temperamental. I mean, even the most advanced battery technology still relies on, you know, basic metal transferring ions from the cathode to the anode or vice versa.
Exactly. So if you are driving, and you know what, I wanted to extend the story to, a lot of people have golf carts, mm-hmm. you know, golfers. I don't know if you golf, Ben. You know,
yeah. If you live in a golf estate, lots of people drive that around.
Yeah.
Yes, those have lithium ion batteries in them as well, and many people leave them charged overnight, 24 hours, the entire weekend, the entire week. How do you know that's not going to sit out?
So, George, it actually happens at some golf courses over the years that they're obviously all in huts together, right? And I think even as recently as this year, I think it was Milton Golf Course, that happened, and then the entire shed went up in flames.
Exactly. So it's not only reserved for EVs. It gets the headlines because, you know, it's new to the market. But it's, in India, as a matter of fact, electric bikes were catching fire. Hand over foot.
Carl says, back to Ben's analogy, send flames to a cougar and that's what happens. Full circle. All right. What else have we got?
So would you ban cars from inner cities?
No. It's the place people probably – like, we don't have public transport infrastructure in South Africa. I mean, what else? You use the Rea Vaya buses? I mean, do me a favor. Like, you can't – this is fine in a city like London or maybe New York. And most people don't want a car because there's nowhere to park the damn thing in big cities like that. And they it's just – essentially, if government, they don't ban you. What they do is they'll charge you a lot of money to drive your car in town. So it's just a tax. It's basically a luxury tax.
Exactly. So San Francisco has just banned cars from Market Street.
How about they ban homeless people? Lost. That would be a good start.
What if they ban number twos from pavements?
That would also be good, yeah. That would be nice, San Francisco. You're so worried about cars, but there are other things on the priority list that you should have got to first. Why are they doing that in San Fran, George?
Well, it's a whole range of things. The first is creating more space for restaurants and businesses, trying to promote walking, pedestrians, and cyclists, and cutting down on injuries in the inner city so people can walk freely, as well as allowing kids to play. So that they don't have to worry about cars. But I think it's more about the space, the business, and the ability to monetize the city.
The government wants to make it. They want to tax people. That's what it is. Number one reason. And by the way, this is also why these carbon taxes that governments all over the world are getting super excited about. It's not because they care about the environment. It's because they want to skim every cent off of you that they can. The other reason that San Francisco is doing this is because the people who run San Francisco are the most left-leaning people in America, and they all believe in the green economy, and they all think that cars are just the most evil things ever. So if they can ban cars from they think they're going to make the world safer and better and greener, and they're not. They're idiots.
And they all smoke weed.
Sure. yes, goddammit. What does weed smell like, Ben?
Poverty, Gareth. Hard poverty.
There we go.
And then the Bond franchise is turning 60.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were familiar with old Bond's franchises, but in commemoration of the 60 years of James Bond films,
yeah,
they will be auctioning off a whole range of Land Rovers and Range Rovers used in the Bond movies, particularly the Bond movie No Time to Die.
Nice.
These Range Rovers and Land Rovers will be stamped with a particular vehicle identification number, you know, the VIN number, that is 007.
Hmm.
Nice. And they're going on auction, the whole range of them, SVRs, Defender 110s, the V8 Bond edition. And they're going to start at about 4 million rand, 200,000 pounds, and the auction will range probably to about 6 million rand. So there's, wow, there's just over 300 Bond editions available worldwide, but these ones were actually used in the movie.
Yeah, I think, Ben, you're a huge Bond fan. I mean, it must be quite cool to say that you're not just driving any old car. You're driving one that was in a Bond movie. That's quite lekker. I think that's nice. They'll probably get their price and some.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I reckon
it's awesome. And it's going to charity too, right?
Mm. No, 100%. Cool. Anything else, George?
Yeah, so hang on a second. George, do you see that this week, talking about cars being auctioned, but Michael Schumacher's 1998 Formula One Ferrari is being auctioned.
Oh.
And they expected the bids to get up to $8 million. But what I find interesting about this is that you look at that car, and it literally just looks like some car that's somewhere in the East Rand is putting together. Back in 1998, those cars were very, very basic. No halo.
No halo. They had, they looked like a Formula Ford looks today.
Yes.
The Formula Ford cars, if you've ever seen one.
I
wonder what's happened to Michael Schumacher, to be honest. It's very, very hush-hush. Nobody really knows.
Well, he's definitely not living his best life. I mean, you know, otherwise he'd still be skiing and driving Formula One cars, but clearly he can't do either of those anymore, so he's probably just drooling a lot.
Yeah, and you wonder why they're auctioning this thing off. So, what is the real
medical bills?
Reason?
Medical bills build up, man. All right, well, let's not end on a depressing, sad note like that. If you're taking a long weekend, you've got until Tuesday to see us again. We'll only be back on Wednesday for people who are away for the long weekend, but otherwise we'll be back on Monday morning for more. Always good to have you on, George. Thank you very much for your time this morning. And don't forget brand new episodes of the Auto Trader podcast every week here on cliffcentral.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Ben, we'll check, I'll see you tomorrow for the rugby, but otherwise I'll see you on Friday next week for the show. Awesome.
All right. Very good.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.